It is actually 9 o'clock, so I'm going to go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Nancy Bernatitis. I am the moderator here at MomsFightingAutism.com. If you're new here, our phone number is 949-333-4806. And once you get there, you enter ID number 168-978-pound, and that'll get you on the phone with us. You will be muted, so we won't be able to hear you. But later on in the webinar, we'll be allowing people to ask questions, so I'll tell you how to ask questions at that point. And I will selectively unmute you as you raise your hands. The website is momsfightingautism.com, and you can listen in either via phone or web. You can ask questions through the website. There's a box on your screen that will allow you to ask questions. Later on we'll be asking live questions of people. So if you have a question you'd like to ask Dr. Nazif, you can either enter it through the website or hold on to it and perhaps have a chance later to ask your question in person. Okay, let me go ahead and introduce our guest. Tonight we have with us Dr. Robert Nazif. He is a psychologist in independent practice. His first book, Special Children, Challenged Parents, The Struggles and Rewards of Parenting a Child with a Disability, has received international recognition. He has lectured internationally, and he has appeared on radio and television. He is the co-editor of Voices from the Spectrum, Parents, Grandparents, Siblings, People with Autism, and Professionals Share Their Wisdom. Living Along the Autism Spectrum is a new DVD which features him along with Stephen Shore and Daniel Gottlieb. Dr. Nazif's specialty is working with families of children with autism and other special needs. He has published many articles in scholarly journals and other publications, and he has a foot in each world as the father of an adult child with autism. He has a special interest and expertise in the psychology of men and fatherhood. Through his experiences as a parent and a professional, Robert relates to both audiences and is a sought-after speaker around the country. Welcome, Dr. Nazif.
Hi, Nancy. It's good to be here.
I'm so glad you're here with me tonight. You want to tell me a little bit about, autism and family life, taking care of everyone's needs? You have slides to share with us this evening?
Oh, yeah. Let's. We can start out that way, and it might be a good introduction.
Okay.
You know, the having a child who's different, and then in addition, and my slide isn't coming up on the screen. Like I'm on it, but is that coming up? The airplane slide.
Let me see. I don't see it on the Moms Fighting Autism site, so go back over to my events on the left-hand side and make sure you're in the correct event.
All right, okay. And now go to, sorry, everyone, we're, now
yes,
I go
thanks
to
for bearing with us.
Control panel.
You clicked on my events.
I clicked on my events, then I went to control
Autism
panel.
Autism and taking care
now
of everyone.
Now slides, okay.
There you go.
Is it up now?
Let me take a look. Are you in the correct webinar?
I have to be.
Did you go back out to, you went out to my events and you clicked the red button?
I went out to my events. I clicked the red autism in the family.
Where the arrow's pointing. Okay.
Right.
Down to control panel. And then up at the top where it says slides.
And then control panel.
Up at the top.
Right. Because I had the slides.
Yes.
Now I'm on
go
the
up
slides.
To the slides at the top.
Right. Okay. Now it's loading the slides.
There you go.
It's coming in now.
There's a slight delay, so if you see the slides and you're ready to roll, It should just be a matter of a couple seconds before we can see.
All right, well, I'm just going to start talking about this, and hopefully the slides will come in. So what often happens, and I have an adult child with autism myself, as you mentioned, so I've been living this life for a long time, and particularly in the beginning, parents and you know, maybe moms more than dads get, you know, pretty much totally immersed in taking care of their child. And sometimes we're just kind of, you know, working on fumes. Our fuel tank's empty. And the, you know, just the stress and strain of it can be overwhelming. And I use this concept of airline safety to, you know, kind of illustrate this theme of family life. When you get on an airplane, when they give you the safety spiel, the flight attendant or the video always says to, if we lose air pressure and the oxygen masks come down, put it on yourself first, because you can't help anybody else if you're not.
Let me interrupt you just a second, Dr. Nazif. For those of you who are on the website, if you click the tab that says slides at the top left-hand side, you will be able to view these slides with us as we go along. So there's a box that says welcome, listen in, slides, and ask a question. Click slides, and it'll load. It'll take a couple seconds, but the slides will load. Okay, sorry for the interruption.
Okay, and I have mine up now, too. This
good.
Is great.
And yes,
okay.
it gives me that visual there of the person on the airplane with the mask on. Okay.
Right,
I need my visual.
Okay. Okay, we're working. We're cooking now. So the idea being that when we have a family member with autism, we do need to pay attention to everyone's needs, especially the needs of moms and dads, because we're the ones that take care of everybody else. Sometimes it feels like a little hard to make space for that, like there isn't much space, and truthfully, there often isn't. This having a child with autism can be consuming, especially in the beginning, but learning how to balance things is what's going to help us for the long haul, help our children develop as fully as possible, and help us have a decent life in the process. So this is the metaphor or way, I think, that kind of works to introduce this to people, because it just makes sense in a very basic way, that if we can't breathe ourselves, we can't help somebody else to breathe. So that's the starting point. In a lot of my dealings with people. And each child's different. So tonight, what I'm hoping to, you know, give some insight into is how a family's life changes and might go through some stages in terms of having a child with autism, learning to take care of that child, and having a full life for everyone. We'll talk a little bit about facts versus fiction in marriage when there's a child with autism. We can talk about issues facing siblings, and we can talk about coping with stress and acceptance. So one, another idea that I think is helpful is, you know, going back to the book of Proverbs, and I think you should see that slide at the moment. It talks about educate each child according to his ways. It's ancient wisdom. It's also the concept that underlies our public education laws. When we have an IEP, that's starting where the child is and educating him or her step by step to have as full life as possible. So my child's first child psychiatrist, Dr. Ruttenberg, talked about starting where the child is and making contact, learning to be with your child. sounds simple, but it can be complex when a child has autism because our child may not be easy to engage with. And this is often what happens, particularly in the beginning and somewhat throughout life with autism. So are there, you know, some specific questions people would like me to address that might be better than just talking for a long time?
We're having a lot of questions come in about siblings, helping siblings understand their siblings' autism,
mm-hmm.
and how to help them relate with that sibling.
Okay. So the way I'd like to get to that is first talk a little bit about the feelings that parents have and then bridge right into some of the issues faced by siblings and what we might be hearing. And you could feed me, when we get to that, some of the questions. So right now, what you'll see on the screen is a picture of me with my son at one day of age. And I think you can see he's making eye contact with me. Most children with autism, a fairly large percentage, were born seemingly typical. And then somewhere in the first 2 years of life, when the autism bomb strikes, we see a gradual fading of the relationship and the child more self-absorbed in the characteristics that we now know are called autism. Difficulty relating and communicating, stuck on one thing, doing things over and over, and just becoming more and more remote at times. But most of our children were born normal, and we wished for and celebrated their births. So siblings, like parents, want to have a healthy, normal sibling. They want to play with their kid. But what happens when a child with autism doesn't want to play with you? What happens for a mom? What happens for a dad? Siblings are going through the same thing at their level, in their way. So I'll show you a few quick slides of my son growing up. Here he is just putting his head up, about 4 to 5 months of age. Here I am throwing him up in the air.
So he's making eye contact. He's meeting
right.
milestones.
Right, right. He's making eye contact. He's, you know, doing what little toddlers his age are doing. So here, he's making eye contact with me. I'm the photographer in this slide
yeah.
called Everyday Joy. Do we have that one up?
Yep, I'm seeing it.
Yeah, yeah. So everything is really seeming great, and a lot of moms and dads have this experience of the typical development in the early months. Some don't. Some babies are, you know, sometimes the autism emerges earlier, but often that first year of life seems, you know, pretty typical, pretty normal. So my son walked at 1 year of age. I mean, he was just a lot of fun. Here he is, like, looking at me. And all these pictures, I'm the photographer. He's looking right at me. He walks on his birthday. There we are. So, and then when a child's diagnosed or not, you know, when the autism emerges and is eventually diagnosed, those typical moments are seemingly lost. The connection has gotten more and more strained. It's harder to connect. A lot of parents, moms in particular, will talk about feeling rejected because their baby doesn't want to cuddle or isn't making eye contact, isn't engaged, and mother and child aren't enjoying each other.
Well, yeah, we had that same experience, Dr. Nazif, where my husband said that the baby just doesn't like me.
the baby doesn't like me. And what, you know, could be sort of more profound and more profoundly disturbing. Why did he think that? If we could just talk about this a minute.
Because he wasn't making eye contact with him. He didn't react when he made noises at him, and he just seemed aloof and like he didn't want anything to do with his father.
Right. And dads who are spending, you know, less time on the average with their kids have even more of this experience, because moms are having the same kinds of experiences but spending more time with the child and finding ways to connect. But it's not so easy to connect. So what I'm putting up next is a slide about the emotional turmoil that might happen with these feelings of rejection. So here it is, here it is. So there's rejection, there's fear, guilt, sometimes depression, certainly anxiety. What is all this about? What's it mean? Will it go away? When will it go away? And a profound sense often of alienation or loneliness that it's happening to us, it's happening to our child. Even though autism's about 1 in 100 now, which means it's about 1 in 50 families, when it happens in your family, there's a profound sense of being alone. If there was one word that I hear the most, it's how alone people feel in the beginning of this journey. So in order to help our typically developing siblings, it challenges us to dig into our own experience. And like you just mentioned, Nancy, your husband felt rejected. How can a little person, a child, a little boy or a little girl, not feel rejected when their sibling isn't interested in playing with them? There's nothing you want more as a little kid than a brother or sister to play with, to be your companion. People that are only children want a brother or sister, and it's such a important experience in life. So I think what's important is to talk to children at their level, at their developmental level, about what's going on, about the differences that between them and their brother or sister. So do you want to give me a question that's coming in?
Actually, I do. One just came in from Kristen from San Clemente, California. Kristen mm-hmm. asked, how do I cope with my husband? Cope with my son who prefers my husband?
And this is her son with autism?
Yeah. And she says, I do so much for him and I love him, but it's hard not to feel resentful and hurt when he rejects me.
Oh, wow. I think the first step is just your courage in putting that out here, Kristen. That's a very deep feeling. And your first step in coping with it is to give it a name, put it out in the open, talk about it, and acknowledge that that's what it feels like. And it just kind of takes my breath away to think about this and feel the heartbreak. Without knowing your situation more, I'm not sure why your child prefers his dad more, but it's a profoundly disturbing experience to a mom. Most little kids will, you know, certainly run to their moms. But it might be, if I can just speculate a little bit, that you're home all day and you are challenging your child a lot, and then when your husband comes home, he might be, you know, more just having fun, you know, which is a great thing, but your child might prefer that. Now, of course, he needs structure, But what I would suggest is that you pay attention to, you know, the times you are having fun with your son, and developing your relationship that way in things that are mutually enjoyable. And notice your feelings, notice what's going on, but realize that this is changeable, although painful. And there can be ways for you to connect with your son. He may need a break from you when his dad comes in. I mean, it might be as simple as that. It's certainly something that might be worth talking to a therapist about or a professional working with your child, without knowing your situation specifically, it's hard to comment further. But I hope that's helpful.
We actually had the same situation in our house where I'm the person who makes him do all the hard work, and then Dad comes home and he's the playmate.
Uh-huh. So you related to that.
I do. But what I found was, yeah, I do all the hard work and I get none of the glory, but I do get that break when Dad comes home.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Sam's having a great time with his dad. So that's, you know, I've come to terms with that. That's okay with me. I don't have to be the favorite parent. You know, it's not a contest, you know.
Right.
A charity contest. So I've got a job to do, and I'm doing my job, and, you know.
Right. I'm sure your child doesn't
love
you any less.
Right. Mm-hmm. He loves me. I love him. He loves his dad. He's a great big old clown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's okay. That is what it is.
Right. And you wouldn't want to take that away.
Absolutely not. I can't be everything. So if I have to be the person who makes him do all the hard work, that's my role.
Who's ever with him more is gonna have that.
Yeah, exactly. Paula from Redmond says, how does a parent of a child with autism cope with isolation?
Oh, okay. We're on to another issue here. Okay, that's great. I think one of the main ways is connecting with other parents who have kids on the spectrum. And there's really a vibrant autism community out here, all around the country and the world for that matter. So I would look for organizations in your area where you can meet other parents. Have play dates with other families who also have kids on the spectrum. Hang out, you know, do things together. Autism's now, you know, more than 1 in 100, and it's 1 in 50 families, as I mentioned before. So the way to cut down the isolation is to reach out to other people and to some extent get involved in the community, but also to reach out to the people around you, the people that care about you and that love you and your child, and ask them for some support that you need whenever it's possible. A lot of people don't know what to say or do, but when you're able to ask for something, they often respond.
That's true. Getting support, I think, is a huge key. I felt so isolated before I got connected with the autism community, and now I don't feel so alone. Huge support. Couple of the same kind of questions here. Laura from Aledo, Illinois asks, how do we handle people that keep downplaying the anxiety and complete time-consuming job that a family has with an autistic child? We have 2 autistic kids and people just do not get it.
Well, one of the things that helps people get it is spending time with kids. And I don't know that there's any shortcut to people getting it. It's a hard thing to understand. I think it's hard for all of us, and the further away we are from the situation, the harder that's going to be. So, but certainly having 2 children on the spectrum, is an extremely, extremely difficult life for you, and, certainly you need support, and certainly you need, you know, people who do get it. But again, the autism community is a great place for that. It's a place where you can feel normal. It's a place where people don't judge you or your kids, and you can be embraced. So I would, you know, urge you to find your local Autism Society chapter or other organization for families of children with autism and other special needs. And I think you'll be at home there. And having that kind of home, having some support of people who do understand, it will even might wind up helping you bridge the gap until other people in your life understand. It's a journey, and it's a long one. Depending on where you're at it, I think you will find more support as you go.
Yeah, I have to say, in our situation, we really don't have any friends that don't have special children anymore. that's
right.
Our circle of friendship is people with other, you know, special needs kids, and it's because we all get it. So there is.
Yeah, and it's a home. They're your buddies.
Yeah, we're our support system, and we have each other at least. So I would suggest people trying to get connected to others. You know, it doesn't have to be autism. It can be anything. Just get connected. There's a couple of questions here about relationships. Did you want to do some more slide talk? And then
Well, let me cover a few more things about brothers and sisters.
Sure.
Because since that's a common question. So just let's imagine that it's you, that you have a brother or sister with a disability, with autism, with some kind of special need, but we're talking about autism. Think about if your brother or sister had this condition, what problems would you face? How would you want your parents to handle it? And when we change places is often when, you know, we can see the answer. We could see what's going on. So I'm putting up a slide now that's based on what siblings have told researchers and what they've said in interviews. So, and you're seeing a slide of my son Tariq, and we were having pizza together. So now here's the one I want you to see. Siblings really talk about wanting parents to notice them, to notice their accomplishments, because parents are, you know, very much absorbed in taking care of their brother or sister who has autism. They want more attention, some fair amount of attention. Is it possible for it to be equal? Not really. Not in any family is it possible to give equal attention. Because everyone's different, but it is possible to give some special attention to each child. And I think if we think of it that way, this is going to be a little smoother. Typical siblings want time alone with their parents. Like us, they get worn out. Autism can be exhausting. They want some time alone with their parents. They want some time alone with their friends. They don't want to have to be with their brother or sister all the time. That's also true of typical siblings with their typical brothers and sisters, but it's more so true of the siblings of children with autism. They need the freedom to complain, to talk about their feelings, and that can be hard to listen to their complaints. And they may echo some of ours about the difficulty of life, the stress of life. They want a family life that's as normal as possible. And the way to help them adjust is to be giving them information about their brother or sister's condition at their level. There's a lot of good children's books about autism, more and more of them all the time. I saw a question that came in earlier about should I talk to my child who has autism and tell them what their condition is? And my answer would be yes. Give them information on their level. Your son or daughter knows they're different. Your typical child knows their siblings different. Give them information on their level. The more they understand it, the more they'll be able to adjust positively. Our children are junior versions of ourselves. They need information. They need support. They need to meet other brothers and sisters. All of this is extremely beneficial. So I hope I've covered that to some extent now.
There is one question, and I wondered if that would be your answers. What you just said was all those different things. Lacey in Roxboro, North Carolina asks, how do I deal with my older typical child that acts out for attention due to feeling left out because of the attention my autistic son gets? And it probably would be all those things you said, just time alone with the parents. And
yeah, here, I want to show now a slide that actually my daughter wrote this when she was 11.
Oh, I've got it.
Is that up? Okay. So, I mean, I think my brother always hugs my dad. This was my daughter when she was 11. Whenever we go canoeing, dad hugger. When we go hiking, dad hugger. Every time he's around and I try to go near my dad, dad hugger. So, I mean, when I show this, it really seems to click with people. This is what the experience is like. Our children with autism really do hog our attention. They can't help it. It's not their fault. But our other children often feel marginalized, neglected, ignored. And what we want to do is give them attention in the ways that they need it. The acting out as a way to get attention is something a child can learn in a family that has a child with autism. So we want to notice their accomplishments, notice their contributions, just notice them as much as possible. And that will minimize this problem of having to have a problem to get noticed. It's understandable. It's to some extent often unavoidable. But we can counteract it by trying to pay special attention to each of our children.
In my circle of friends, we've discussed, some parents say it's okay, some parents wouldn't do it on a bet, but do you think it's okay for a parent or a family to get a sitter for the special child that would not enjoy the festival, for instance, and to go out and take the typical kids?
Well, I think these are choices for every family to make. Some families kind of split up in order to do it, you know. But sometimes, you know, it depends what works. You know, sometimes you need an extra person to go along to help with, your child on the spectrum. I think there's a lot of possible ways to work this out. Obviously, we want to look for things where the family can be together as a whole. But I would say also, like, look for things that are fun and look for things that meet needs that aren't being met. So I can certainly understand people not wanting to do that, but it really depends on your situation and what you're comfortable with and what would work in your own family. So that's the way I look at it, Nancy.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. And there are SIB groups, SIB shops, and sibling groups for people
right.
to join.
They're kind of popping up everywhere. So this book, SIB Shops, I'm showing the cover in a minute, which is available everywhere. If in your area there's nothing going on for siblings, this is something, you know, you could ask for in your local, from your local school district or agency. And SIB Shops is a program developed by Don Meyer. And there's also a whole network of training for this, and there's a website. Siblingsupport.org is the website. And there's information there for and by siblings of all ages. Siblingsupport.org.
Very nice.
So were there some questions on relationships?
There were. The one from Brenda Lee in Slidell asks, how to be more than roommates as husband and wife? I keep hearing about this on TV shows, Facebook. How can this be prevented, I guess, them becoming roommates, and what to do if it's already occurring?
Wow. Well, people don't get married to be roommates. But it does happen. We get absorbed. And it happens in plenty of families and plenty of marriages, not just when there's a child with autism. But what can happen is just so much emphasis on taking care of the child that the marriage and the relationship suffers. So I'm going to show everyone a few slides about that. See if this one comes up. One of the first books I read about autism was called A Place for Noah. And Josh Greenfield, who wrote the book, said it this way: there's a strain on any marriage whenever a baby is sick, and we always have a sick baby. You know, when your baby's little, if the baby's having digestive problems or feverish or having a cold, we're checking all night. We're watching. We're a little bit on edge. And autism can leave us on edge kind of indefinitely. So in order not to become roommates, we have to find ways to connect while this is going on. Just like we're looking for ways to connect with our kids, we're looking for ways to connect with our partners at times. A really good book about married life in general that I would recommend is called Grown Up Marriage. That's by Judith Viorst. She puts it this way, and I think this slide will be coming up momentarily. Although marriage is for grown-ups, very few of us are grown up when we marry. But marriage, which can be the most vexatious of human relationships, can also be the engine of our growth. So while we're dealing with autism, can we find a few minutes to spend with each other? While we're raising any child, how do we do it, you know? And a lot of people, you know, have been worried about the divorce rate. And for years, there's been a myth in the public, kind of an urban myth, as well as in the autism community, that the divorce rate was 80%. Recent research has confirmed that the divorce rate in families that have a child with autism is comparable to the national average. However, the stress and the distress is much greater in general. So, however, the opposite is also true, that couples report great love and coming together as a result of having a child with autism, learning to work together, learning everything we can learn about ourselves and just in a sense not to be kind of cliche about it, about the meaning of life. And what's really important. A lot of people are becoming closer. Why does it feel like being roommates? I'm just putting up a slide that this one talks about how children add to the family but subtract from a marriage. And moms are often preoccupied, and it's normal, preoccupied with taking care of our kids. That's a normal and natural process. But with autism, it lasts longer than with typical kids. So this starts to, you know, take a strain on the marriage, on not having much time together. And then in terms of, when you talked about roommates, let's talk about the bedroom a little. For men, a man may need sex to feel close. But on the other hand, a woman often needs the closeness to feel romantic and sexual. And so this is the dilemma for many couples. And it might be more true for couples who have a child with autism who are more tired, more stressed, more absorbed in day-to-day things and not having that much time for each other. So what do we do about it? I want to talk a little about that. I think here's some tips that I think might start to warm up a relationship. And they'll be up in a minute. This slide is called Tips for Couples. I think we all want to be appreciated. And I think for men, it's often hard to listen to problems without trying to fix it. So I suggest for women to tell them to just listen, that that's all you need. And I think you'll have a better listening partner. And for men and women, tell each other what's going well. I urge men to tell her what she's doing well. Tell her how you appreciate her as a mom for your kids. And likewise, for women, tell your partner what he's doing well. Tell him how he's being a good father or male role model. And men are pretty good at taking breaks, better than women anyway. So guys, give your wife a break. Give your partner a break. And for women, while it's hard to talk to men about what we can't fix or change, tell your partner what he can do for you. And often you'll get a good response that way. And then look for the times. You might not be able to have a date night, but look for the romance in everyday life. Look for a hug. Look for a time you can talk for 10 minutes about something other than your kids or other than autism. Look for a time to take a walk around the block or just the little things that you would do with a friend. Relationships start out with friendship, and it's friendship that maintains them. So these are just some little ideas about how to avoid being roommates. It's you know, and a lot of this is looking for each other, finding each other, and finding the ways to spend time with each other. You might not be able to get a babysitter, but there's moments you can steal just for the two of you. And that's what's going to bring a little romance back, a little excitement and connection about being together. When you love someone, you want to be with them. So that's what we want to look for.
Dr. Nassif, this question falls right in line here with what you're talking about. Maybe you'd have some more information for her. It's Denise in Canada. She asks, as a mom, I find myself completely exhausted on a daily basis. Our marriage has suffered tremendously. Every ounce of energy seems to go to our child. Sleeping in his own bed is such an issue for us that it can take anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour to get him to sleep. Then I ever so quietly tiptoe to bed like a zombie, and an hour later he's in our bed. That leaves us with no time together as a couple. It's not that I'm not interested in making love with my husband, it's that I'm so flippin' tired, and he hates to hear that as an excuse. Any suggestions?
Well, the sleep problems are really common with autism, and you know, one idea is to consult with a professional who is skilled in this area and can help develop a plan to help with sleep. Although this is one of like the major problems with autism is the kids that can't sleep through the night and they're always coming in your room. And it could be like the typical kids who do it when they're little, but it goes on a lot longer with autism. So, you know, one idea is to get some help for the sleep problem. Sometimes medication is helpful and necessary, but certainly there might be some behavior modification that's possible. But there's really no easy answer. And this question really, I think, will resonate with a lot of people. It's not that a mom in your situation isn't interested in sex and romance, but the strain of life just doesn't make it too appealing. So you might look, you know, for other ways to be together, and I'm not talking about just physically or sexually, but look for other ways to be together. Look for ways to show him that you do want to be with him. And it might be possible, you know, at some point to have a babysitter or to go out or to go away for a weekend together. That you know, there's different possibilities, but I would certainly urge you to see if you could get some help for the sleep problem. The earlier in life that you can work on this and hopefully get your child to sleep in their own room, at least for part of the night, the better it'll be. The older your child gets, the harder it is to break that pattern.
I can concur that. Been there, done that.
And have you succeeded?
Yeah, the sleep issues have been very much remedied. I can't say that I have any more energy or spunk at the end of the night than I ever have before, but we are making a concerted effort together to just make ourselves a priority again. We had fallen to the back burner, and Sam is 13. I don't know how much longer we can sit on the back burner and simmer and wait, you know?
Right.
So making our relationship a priority has really been at the forefront for us lately. And I think it's made a huge difference in our stress levels and how we deal with him. You know, if we're getting along, then we're much better at coping with him, you know, as a tag team.
Mm-hmm. So how do you make time for each other? How's that working in your situation?
One thing we do is, while he's at school, we meet for lunch. You know, we don't have to get a sitter. We don't have to pay a sitter. We just go meet for lunch. And that just gives us, you know, 45 minutes of undivided FaceTime with each other once a week. We did go to a marital retreat recently and talked about everything from what made us fall in love with each other to, you know, what were you thinking yesterday when you did what you did? You know, it was a very good time for us, you know, we've been married 20 years. To go back and talk about, wow, really, what was it? What was it I liked about you back then?
Right.
It's really healthy for our relationship.
And I bet it's still there, isn't it?
It is. I remembered. And it made me come home and get out the old home videos.
Mm-hmm.
And to see us as a young couple again, that was really fun. And it has made me want to spend more time with him, because I remember now I do like this guy. But, you know, we can hardly have a whole sentence of conversation together, but I do like him. So I think just making an effort has made a real difference.
Right, and I think that might make a difference for this woman. You know, finding the place to make an effort or the way to do it, and you know, and hopefully her husband too can respond to that.
Yeah, I know that a big strife in marriages is when one part of the marriage isn't fully invested in the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But this question from Mary from Louisiana hits that right on the head. She says, I have a husband and two kids, high functioning, all not otherwise specified. So the two kids are high functioning autism. Her husband's in denial. The marriage with the roommate may be due to the spouse being on the spectrum, she suggests. But also, how do you get past a husband that's in denial and grandparents that are in denial?
Well, you know, everyone's different. But I think one of the things that really helps the most is just time spent with your child. Like often when I see dads who are really connected, both, you know, with their spouses and with their kids, they've spent a lot of time with the kids. So any way you can make that happen is going to break through. Did she mention how old the kids are?
No, she did not.
So, I mean, it's hard to accept. It's hard for everyone to accept. And sometimes the best way, although I don't mean this in a flip way, is to just accept where the people in our lives are, that autism is painful and difficult to understand and to accept, to be willing to live with. That's what I mean by acceptance, to be willing to be there. But I think the more exposure people have, the more time they're around a child who's different, the denial kind of melts away. It's easy to say, you know, nothing's wrong with him or nothing's wrong with her, you know. They're just normal. They're just having a problem. This will go away. It's easy to say that. It's painful to face the realities that this condition is ongoing, and it ebbs and flows, but it's ongoing. But I think time is really one of the healing factors here.
I did want to mention to our callers that if you would like to ask Dr. Nassif a live question, you can press *2, and that will raise your hand, and I will unmute you, and you can ask your question. So it's *2 to raise your hand if you have a question you'd like to ask. I'm going to go back to our submitted questions through the website and see... There's a lot of questions here speaking about aggression, aggression towards siblings, how to deal with aggression. A lot, like, towards siblings. How do I get my typical child to be safe when my other child is acting out?
Well, this is one of the... you know, most difficult and troubling things. I think, it's hard to solve this problem without knowing the situation. But I think it might be important to get a professional person involved. But let me talk about some of the principles here that might help people to figure it out. I think it's really helpful to learn about the principles of positive behavioral support. And when we look at behavior this way, we want to observe when is the problem happening, what's going on in the situation. Is the child trying to get something, trying to get away from something? Are they responding to something sensory, something in the environment? But just what is going on? And likewise, observe when everything's going smoothly and there isn't a problem. We can often learn clues for how to solve a problem by seeing when it's not happening. You know, that there's a few concepts, but when you're immersed in this, it's hard to be objective. And children with autism, particularly when there's more of a language impairment, are much more physical than they might be otherwise. And one of the things that's often helpful to realize, to know... is that as your child develops more of a communication system, whether that's verbal, whether that's picture exchange, whether that's signs, that the more your child learns to communicate, generally the less of this kind of problem behavior we see where the child's becoming physical. But certainly I'd get somebody, you know, a behaviorally oriented therapist who understands these situations to help you.
Very good advice. We're going to go ahead and take a live call.
Okay.
There's a slight delay, so I will. Are you soon? Hi, caller. Can you please state your first name?
Julie.
Hi, Julie. What's your question?
How do you deal with feelings of jealousy towards, you know, seeing anybody, actually, family, other family members, extended family members who have normal kids, friends' kids, and, you know, that don't have these problems?
Well, I think these feelings are natural. That's the first thing, that you're not a bad person. You're a normal person to have them. It's almost impossible to not compare, to not notice. So your first step is to accept that you're noticing this. Mm-hmm. And to me, it implies that there's some pain in the situation. There's some longing for a typical child. And that's normal, and that's natural. Mm-hmm. And kind of letting that feeling be actually may help it to pass. And in time, you may be able to enjoy these other kids as opposed to find your mind comparing, you know, your situation to theirs. But I certainly found early on in my son's life the same thing, that it was very painful to be around people with typical kids, whether they were my nieces and nephews or mm-hmm. friends' kids or neighbors' kids. The pain was just there all the time. Mm-hmm. I think what you're feeling is a reflection of your pain. I would just, you know, want to support you in that and let you know that other parents are feeling the same thing in the situation. And it ebbs and flows, and at times it passes, but it to some extent, you know, will never be that far away.
Hmm.
Thank you, Julie. I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Nazif, I know that through it, and I know that a lot of my friends have gone through it, but did you experience the stages of grief when your child was diagnosed?
Oh, sure. I mean, I was beside myself for a long time. A really long time.
And your child is an adult now, so...
Right.
Did it ebb and flow?
Did it what?
Did it ebb and flow? Did it...
Oh, yeah.
Go?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And definitely worse in the beginning and less over time. You know, but I can't tell you that it doesn't come back, because it does. I mean, sometimes I'll see... particularly a dad, you know, with a son of almost any age, and doing something I can't do with my son. And it'll come back for a moment. You know, I'll feel a sense of longing or loss. But compared to when he was little, that passes. You know, I just notice it. But in the beginning, it was very intense.
How about when you see other family members or other friends' kids meeting milestones like thriving, getting married, having kids?
That can be hard to enjoy. I mean, I've certainly experienced that, but, you know, and more, you know, as time went on, I've been able to enjoy the accomplishments and the life cycle events of other people's kids, and it's great. But that was very hard to enjoy for a long time. But I think what helps is to know that isn't crazy, that isn't neurotic, that's a normal response to a difficult situation, and that you can have those feelings and that they pass, you know, they'll ebb and flow, but you can make peace, with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a defect in you that you feel it. That you might be jealous, or you might have trouble, you know, enjoying a situation, which is easy for other people because their kids don't have the same challenges, and hard for you. So developing some compassion for our own selves, for our own struggles, is really helpful with this. As opposed to trying not to feel it. Trying not to feel it is like quicksand. We get stuck in it. In fact,
Do you see that men or fathers tend to grieve differently than the mothers?
Well, it's more on the inside with guys. It's just it's verbalized less. The same feelings and phases seem to be there, but it's more inner. And for men, it's harder to admit these kind of feelings than it generally is for women. So I just put up a slide of a woman sinking in quicksand. I like to ask, what'll help her? What happens if she keeps kicking and screaming and trying to get out of there? The quicksand will suck her in. And what helps her get out is actually to stop kicking and let herself float to the top. Trying to escape our feelings is like quicksand. And there's maybe a little more we could talk about here. I'm gonna put up another slide. This one's called The Rule of the Mind. Should come up there momentarily. When we try not to think about something, and whether that's a thought, a feeling, an urge, a sensation, it often actually, you know, gets us stuck on that. So let's try this little experiment just for, you know, 10, 15 seconds. How many times have you thought about jelly donuts in the past week or about chocolate?
And every day.
Now use all your mental powers not to think about chocolate. Just for about 15 seconds. Let's see what happens. You can be my subject, Nancy. That's 10 seconds.
I've already failed.
That's 15. So what happened as you tried?
My mind kept going back to chocolate.
And this is a simple experiment that's been done in laboratories that actually trying to stop thoughts is counterproductive. It makes us think them more. What is more helpful with our difficult thoughts and feelings, whether that's jealousy or sadness or anger, is to just notice them and let them be and be honest with ourselves and be honest to whoever we can be open with. And then it tends to like float to the top and float away. But trying not to think it keeps us stuck there. So we need some strength inside ourselves to face these difficult things and support from others, and we move through it. And the moving through it involves and is helped by learning to enjoy our children again, by forming a relationship that's based on who our children actually are, not who we originally wanted them to be. You know, and there's a parallel in our marriage, too, in forming a relationship with the person we're really with, not who we wish them to be, but who they're really with, who we're really with. And when we're working on that relationship with our child, some of these difficult feelings pass, some of these difficult behaviors even lessen, as we're learning to connect with the autism in place and as part of how we calibrate our connection, understanding how it affects us.
For our listeners on the phone, if you would like to ask a live question, please press star 2, and that way I'll know that your hand is raised. You can ask about anything. Chocolate, pretty much anything.
Even chocolate.
Even chocolate. going forward here, asking about taking care of yourself when you are grieving. How do you take care of yourself as well as take care of your child when you're still in that grieving process?
Well, I don't know that it's a full-time thing, but I would say kindness towards ourselves is one of the way of taking care of ourselves. Looking for ways to take little breaks for things we enjoy, maybe meeting a friend for coffee or tea or a snack or a lunch, taking a walk, just little things. Realizing that we need time for ourselves. Are there little things you do in that way, Nancy, that you might want to share?
Yeah, we've just joined the YMCA, for instance, and I've arranged for a parent of another special needs child to swim with my son while we're there.
Right.
While he's swimming, I go do yoga or get on the elliptical machine or do something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in the building. I'm still available, but I'm doing my own thing. And some days I'm able to break away and go do my own thing, and some days I'm not. But the days that I am able to, wow, that's me time. And it's a really good mental break. Personally, I've joined, several groups. There's one here locally called Special Moms, and we are moms of all different kinds of special kids. And we get together once a month, and we don't necessarily even talk about our kids. We just go bowling or get a bite to eat or something, and we just spend time together, just get a break.
And take a break from talking about kids.
Take a break from talking about it, but it's all, if you have a meltdown because you didn't get a strike, we all know why. It's not a bowling.
Right. And the other thing I find in what you just said about the gym is you're looking for those opportunities to just steal some time for yourself. But you're available if you're needed, but you're really going to grab this time for you.
Exactly. Exactly. And trying to find things that my son likes to do at the Y, like walk the track.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, while we're walking the track together and he's pointing out the basketball hoops and all that kind of stuff, I'm still able to get a break because he's happy and, he's engaged, he's happy, he's content for the moment. I'm taking this moment.
Wow.
Just grab it here and there where I can.
Sure.
Books on tape.
Makes all the sense in the world.
Books on tape or e-books, they're my best friend because you can go somewhere in a book mentally, but I'm still sitting in the car waiting for therapy to start. But mentally, I'm a million miles away.
And just getting something for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Feeling some time. We have a question here from a caller. I'll take.
Sure.
Hi, welcome to the program. Your first name?
I'm Mary.
Hi, Mary. Welcome. Did you have a question?
Hello. I'm going to be honest. I've got so much on my mind, and I'm kind of losing track. I'm the one who wrote about my kids. I have an 11-year-old who's my youngest, who was hesitantly diagnosed PDD at 3.5, and then she's become more obviously. But then my boy is 13, and my husband is also. I don't know if you saw that message. He is a high-functioning and very successful man, but he doesn't have the communication skills because of it and other things that I've dealt with. I won't go into how I ended up with him, but we've been together 21 years, and I've just sorted it out to nail it down this last year. So I didn't realize this existed until after I had my youngest. My boy also does fall somewhere on it. So,
So you've got a family on the spectrum.
I've got an eldest who's not, and she's 15, But yeah, and she and I connect and do well to support each other. But we're both just kind of sorting out that daddy is, and Keith, my middle one, looked ADHD for a while to many people, and so it's been quite a period of adjustment. Even more recently, in the last few years, sorting it out more. So I guess I was wondering about one thing. If you know, my youngest has, they both are obsessed with stories. They love manga and media stuff, and they play together because of it, which is good. The boy was a talkative one with the ADHD kind of thing, even though he would stay on his obsessions, and was kind of hyper in play with the younger one because they were finding a way to bond that way, and he didn't know what to do with her at first. I allowed it. So they do have a relationship, and they support each other that way by being friends, but at the same time, they obsess and stay in these little stories they make up and pretend, and she'll go off and do it by herself. It has an appearance sometimes of almost schizo, you know, kind of switches, kind of talking and back and forth. And recently she told me she has thoughts she doesn't want invade her mind and come in, and I just wondered, have you heard of that as being an early symptom of that?
It's really, you know, kind of hard to answer this question. But, you know, I think you need, you may need a professional to, like, sit down with you and your daughter and sort this out. I mean, this isn't really something I could talk about without knowing the situation and talking to her myself.
Right.
But there might be something going on with her. There's a lot going on in your family. I mean, you're in a very challenging situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
I wish I could be more helpful, but that is just too complicated for, you know, this medium.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. That's hard. I can't imagine what it's like to have one of the parents be on the spectrum as well.
Well, sometimes that's an interesting thing to talk about. Maybe we can chat for a few minutes about it. Sometimes that could actually be a little bit of a benefit if the person on the spectrum, and sometimes it's the mom, sometimes it's the dad, can be a really good interpreter and understander of what's going on with the child.
Wow.
If they know, if they understand their diagnosis and and, you know, and are tuned into the whole situation.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, I mean, that's...
I hadn't thought of it that way.
It's quite... but if somebody is not comfortable with the diagnosis, is in denial of it, undiagnosed, that can really be hard. You know, so there's a lot of advantages that could happen, but it really requires everybody dealing with the diagnosis and being comfortable and understanding themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And often there is a parent on the spectrum or with some of the same characteristics. It's really more common than I think we even can imagine sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's coming up more and more and more that after a child's diagnosed, often one of the parents is diagnosed or the parent, identifies because they have some of the characteristics, just things like that.
Hmm. Well, that's very interesting.
I want to tell people while we're online, if you want to check out my website, for our psychology practice, alternativechoices.com. You'll see, you know, our Facebook feeds into there. We have a blog as well, and we're always posting things that people write in and that the therapists that work with us write in. Like today, if you go to our webpage, there's a blog on sensory perspectives by Kate Altman. And you can, like, right from our website, see all the recent postings on Facebook. You don't even have to be a Facebook member, but If you get a Facebook ID, you can become a fan, and you'll get the feeds from our site. But visit our website. You'll see our blog and our Facebook.
And we can friend you on Facebook?
Yeah. Actually, it's called Fan for an organization. But
Fan, there you go. We can friend you.
And like right now, I just looked. I didn't know about this, but there's just a new blog that is from the art therapy world, which is art therapists talking about their work with art therapy and children with autism. And all kinds of images there that children with autism have made. So that's just something that was just posted today.
Very nice. I'll check it out. While we're talking about the Internet, Hugo from Texas asked if I could share some more information about the Special Moms Group. And I'll quickly just let folks know that this was just a group started by a mom of a special needs child here in our local town. She just started a Yahoo group, and people that she would meet at therapy or friends that she knew, she would just invite them to join. And I think the group may have 300-some people in it now.
Wow.
You can post questions through the group. If you need some advice or if you have something to sell or, something autism-related to sell or, just we're always communicating back and forth via the group. And then, like I said, we get together once a month for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So if you can make dinner but not breakfast, there's an opportunity there. And we have a couple of ladies that organize it now, but we all take turns hosting. So we get together typically at Christmas time, and they have a sheet laid out for the whole year, and you just pick which month you want to host.
Wow.
And it can be anything from bowling to, I actually hosted one recently where I took my group of friends to our local art studio that has classes for special needs, and they have a little gift shop where they sell the items. And so we got together and we just made an art project, and they shopped the gift shop and got to learn more about that program. So it was just a really fun time to get together and do some therapy.
Wow.
Everyone brings snacks. Yeah, it's kind of fun. So it's just, we always try to think of different new creative things to do besides just getting together to eat, which is always a bonus.
Yeah, that's great.
But that's a little bit about the Special Moms Group, and anyone can start a group like that. So someone has posted a question, Dr. Nazif, asking, what is your website again, and can you repeat the name on Facebook?
Sure, alternativechoices.com. So if you go to alternativechoices.com, Facebook feeds in, and you'll see it right there, and you can either, just view the current postings, or you can click and go to Facebook, I'll give you our Facebook, on Facebook we're Alternative Choices also, but if you put Alternative Choices in the Facebook search engine, you'll come up with us. Hopefully that answers it.
And I think on your website there's also like a listing of books that you've had a hand in and publications people can pick up.
Right. And there's articles I wrote, and are the articles I wrote still on your website out of date, Nancy? From the conference in October? Did I lose you? Nancy?
I'm back.
Oh, okay.
Are you still talking? I lost power.
Oh,
okay,
oh no. I thought it was me, and I was starting to call you on your cell. So anyway, we're all back.
Sorry about that, everyone. I lost power, and I'm back now. Out of breath, but back. We did have a question from Carol in Houston. Carol asks, I have trouble finding peace with not doing enough.
So I can relate to that.
There are so many therapists, et cetera, et cetera. How do you advise dealing with the guilt of what?
I'm losing you again, Nancy. Hello? Let me talk a little about Carol's question on guilt, and I hope this is coming through. I think moms more than dads experience a lot of guilt in this situation. And it's hard to know when you're doing enough. I do think one way to look at this is that guilt is normal, particularly when we have a child and a child that's so different, and guilt ordinarily is helping us look at our responsibilities in life. But sometimes that feeling of being guilty that I'm not doing enough, we want to look at that more closely and see what we're actually doing and how much we're responsible for. So, and I used earlier the idea of quicksand that maybe nothing's enough, because that may really be a true thought, but it might not be your fault if nothing's enough. It might be that you're facing a difficult situation, you're facing a disorder that's lifelong, that ebbs and flows but doesn't go away. Some acceptance of the lifelong nature of autism may help you let go of the guilt to some extent. Just remember that it's about responsibility, that it's a normal feeling, but excessive guilt can keep us from living fully. And you might want to, again, connect with other parents, other moms. The guilt feelings are all over the place. And just talking to other people in similar situations, you may find a great relief. It takes some courage to admit, hey, I feel guilty. Hey, I'm not sure if I'm doing enough. But I think you'll benefit from sharing that feeling and looking at what you are doing and giving yourself some credit. Are you back, Nancy?
Yep. You're speaking about guilt... I have some guilt about my phone's battery, but I'm back. Dora,
are you responsible for it?
I'm not. I'm not responsible for anything. Dora from New York, New York asks, speaking of guilt, how do you discipline a child when you know that it's the diagnosis?
Well, if the behavior we're seeing is part of the diagnosis, then it's not a question of discipline in the sense of punishment. One way I think of the word discipline is look at the root. And And in the root, if you look at the word discipline, we can also see disciple. And it's the way I would say to think about it is that we're responsible to lead our children, to teach them, particularly when we know that a given situation, that a behavior is part of the diagnosis, it just doesn't make sense to be, in a sense, punishing it. But it does make sense that we're trying to teach skills to deal with the situation. But, you know, this is really a sticking point for people. And I think you'll feel pressure from other people that, you know, maybe they're saying your child just isn't disciplined and that's why they're acting the way they are. But if you know it's part of the diagnosis and you're dealing with the diagnosis and you're getting them help and you're helping, then the concept of discipline doesn't exactly fit. But we do want to deal with the behavior and help our children learn and develop as fully as possible within who they are. But they need our acceptance to do that. They need our love. They need us to understand them and to feel understood. So I hope that helps a little bit. I certainly understand the question.
Yeah, I do too. Carmen in Canada asks, do you ever come to peace with your child having autism, and where are you with it right now?
Well, I think most people do come to some peace with this, or an awful lot, and I think I am, you know, most days, most times. Of course, when there's a problem, it kind of stirs up a lot of old stuff, you know? And that's just to be expected, but there's just less and less of that, and more peace. You know, I know he's made me a different person. I thought I would change him, and in the end, he has changed me. Changed the way I think about life, changed the way I think about parenthood, just really changed who I am, and in a good way. So that brings me peace. But it's not an easy journey. It's just not. I don't think anyone would just choose this just for the heck of it.
No, I agree. It's not something any of us would wish, but when you do come to peace with it, it's a blessing at times, not always,
right. I mean, I think that's real life, Nancy. I like the way you put it. I mean, it's not a blessing 24/7. It's just really not. But there's a lot of silver linings, and it's normal to, like, want it to cure it and want it to go away. And in effect, that's like our protest, that, like, wanting it to go away is a protest about the relationship that we've lost, that typical relationship, and a protest against the difficulties of this.
See, we had a question from, well, several people have asked this, but this is from Lori, and she kind of sums it up. She's from California. She says, how is your son doing now? She has a 26-year-old son with high-functioning autism that's still living with her. And she wants to know how your son is doing now.
Well, my son has the severe, you know, pretty classic case of autism. He lives in a group home. So, you know, it's a different situation. And I'm not involved in his day-to-day care. I see him regularly. In some ways, I think her situation can be more difficult than mine, in that her son's at home, and, you know, I don't know the details, but but that's, you know, my situation, you know. But there's a whole range of outcomes in adulthood. I mean, some are living at home and working. Some are living at home and not working. Some adults with autism live on their own. Some marry and have their own families. There's everything from very severely disabled to mentally gifted and living in many ways a normal life, you know, with autism.
Stephen Shore is one of those people.
Oh, absolutely. One of my best friends.
Yeah, he's amazing. Again, if anyone's calling in on their phone and they would like to ask a question of Dr. Nassif, all they have to do is press star 2, and that will let me know that you've raised your hand and you have a question that you'd like to ask. We still have questions coming in about, let's see, any advice for grandparents?
Well, this is a great topic. I think for grandparents, often the issue is, how do I help my child?
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried about my baby who's now in a situation that's very challenging. And I think, you know, just in a simple way, that's what's most helpful is to just be a good grandparent. Just embrace the situation. Ask what you can do to help. And just be there. And support your son or daughter. And I've met a lot of great grandparents in this. A book, there's two books I would want to recommend, written by a grandpa I know, by Dan Gottlieb. One book is called Letters to Sam. Sam is his grandson who has Asperger's. And it's a collection of letters to Sam about different situations. Another book, and you can look for these on Amazon, is called The Wisdom of Sam, which is about situations in Sam's life and things that Sam says. And if you want to see a YouTube of this grandpa and his grandson, go to youtube.com and put in Wisdom of Sam, and you'll just see a really beautiful, like, 2 or 3 minute YouTube. Sam has autism, and his grandpa has quadriplegia and is in a wheelchair. They're both different. They're very close. They're wonderful books that speak to everyone in general and to grandparents.
I read that book, the Letters to Sam book.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Sam, so it was just as if it was to my Sam. I have to tell you, after I read it, I went out and bought every copy they had and gave to everybody I knew.
Oh, wow.
It was must-have reading. And it was just, it's a marvelous book. And especially coming from his grandfather, it is recommended reading for all grandparents. Speaking of grandparents and relatives, especially going into the holidays here and being around extended family who's not around the child as much,
mm-hmm.
Jean from Elgin asks, what to say to relatives who are showing their dislike for how the family is handling the child who is screaming?
Oh, wow.
How do you handle the relatives?
Well, it's exasperating. Of course, it's difficult for everyone. It's difficult for mom, dad, and the other kids. And the relatives understand it less. So it might not be so much as how you handle the relatives as, so let's just go back in time to when we didn't have this experience. What did we think when a kid was just screaming? Were we kind and compassionate, or did we wonder the same thing? Did we wonder, like, what the hell is going on, and why doesn't this stop, and why don't these parents, like, make the kids stop? It's a really tough situation, and I think it's disturbing to everyone. We can give people information, but we can't change how they think. But over time, I found an awful lot of this changes as people understand it, as they're around the child more. But I think for everyone, it's just difficult to be around a screaming kid. We all want it to go away. And if you allow yourself to look at it that way, you might feel like sort of less judgment and less annoyance with your relatives, but I certainly understand the situation and hope that it gets better for you. I hope that helps.
Great, great advice. Personally, I don't let it get to me because I understand that they don't get it.
Mm-hmm. So you accept that they don't get it. You accept where they are.
And they may never get it, and that's okay.
Do some of them get it? Have some of them gotten it over time?
Well, yeah. But just when I think someone's got it, they say something really off the wall that tells me, okay, I see that you truly don't get it. Someone suggesting that he just needs a spanking. After I think that person
that's
really
like
gets
the worst
it.
Of all, right? I mean,
yeah,
it could be worse.
So it's one of those situations where I'm not going to waste my time trying to explain autism to you. I'm just going to do what I need to do. And hopefully I only see these people once a year.
Right.
If they're interested in learning more, you know, they can go out and learn more about autism on their own. So often my child looks so typical out in public, for instance, to strangers, that when he does melt down, I get the looks.
Yeah, sure. It's hard to understand.
And I've grown that thick skin where I don't get embarrassed anymore, except I had recently an episode where my son was just laying on his back in the middle of Panera Bread screaming obscenities.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm at the counter and thinking, somebody needs to control their child. Whose kid is that? And I felt myself turn beet red, wanted to leave the situation, and we did. We ended up just leaving.
Which is sometimes the best situation.
I didn't get my Panera, so it wasn't ideal.
Oh, no, that's no good.
Yeah, I really needed that. But, sometimes you just have to drop it and go.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do about it. My kids, my teenagers, my typical teenagers, also have learned to just ignore it and move on. But at first, they would leave me stranded in a situation, and they would be to the door of the store, and me carrying the meltdown to the door. They didn't act like they knew who I was, so that's how they coped, which is perfectly fine with me. I didn't know what I would do if I was in their situation either. You know, what do siblings do? How do they cope with the embarrassment of being in public with their siblings and the siblings melting down?
And that can be harder for them than for us.
Absolutely.
How do you see that?
How do I see that?
The difficulty for a sibling during a meltdown.
Well, the entire store is looking at you. And my kids would make a beeline away from the situation as quickly as possible. And mm-hmm. I didn't take it personally. I mean, if I was in their situation, I'd have done the same thing. I'd have just gotten the heck out of Dodge.
Right. There's that feeling of not wanting to be seen when you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Then I want to hide. I don't want to be seen. So just that you could recognize and support your kids in that is mm-hmm. going to make their life better. It doesn't make it less embarrassing, but it lets them know you understand, you care.
And I will often dress Sam in a T-shirt or something that has the word autism in it.
Mm-hmm.
He has one that says, "Staring will not cure my autism."
Mm-hmm.
And I will.
Oh,
put
wow.
Him in,
no, I love that one. I love that one.
"Staring will not cure my autism." And
that's
he wears
great.
That in public when we go out. And then if he does have a meltdown, it's a little more obvious why. I'm not just a bad parent. We're not just doing the wrong thing. There's a real reason. So that helps.
Yeah, yeah, that's wonderful.
Talking about siblings, Mike from New Jersey asks, my children yell and scream when people enter the house or if we go somewhere. What can I do at Christmas when the relatives come over? My boys spend the day in their room or under the table.
Well, it might be a little too stimulating for them. I think we have to look for situations that will work, although it's painful, and that's a time that the grief comes up around a holiday when you just want everybody to be together. But it might not be the best thing for your kids. So you might want to have them spend a short time with everybody and then let them have some time alone doing something else, or someone spends time with them separate from the whole gathering. Now, it's not ideal, but it might make everything go smoother, and it might lend a feeling of acceptance and peace to the situation. It's when we expect something to be different from the way it is that we suffer the most. When we can face the problem and look at the choices we have for dealing with it, that's when we do better. That's when things go smoother. That's when there's a little more peace.
And along the same lines, Colleen from Clinton says, how do you handle the relatives that do not think there's anything wrong with your child? How do you help them to understand why you avoid some big functions and big parties that the son will not handle well and will be overwhelming for him?
Mm-hmm.
So it's
well,
the same.
She's coping with it. She's picking the situations that work and not punishing herself or her child by getting into the ones that don't work. Now, it's like you said earlier. I mean, some people may never get it. Some will get it. I found over a period of time that a lot of people arrived at their own way of understanding the situation, and that there was more acceptance. But, you know, I think this is what, to some extent, we have to make peace with, that we can't change all this. We can't change other people's reactions. We can just speak our truth and live our truth.
Mm-hmm.
Accepting autism doesn't mean liking it. The situation you're describing, it's not something to be liked. But I think there's ways to make a little peace with it.
When we would go to family functions, I found that the kids, the cousins and so forth, accepted my explanations as to why Sam screamed instead of talked.
Mm-hmm. The kids
better
did.
Than the adults.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the other thing that I think it might be going on in the background of people's heads is that there's a genetic connection with this, and there might be some worry about whether it'll happen to them, or some guilt about is there a problem in our genes. There's often a lot that's not being said, that people might not have the words or the courage to say what they're really thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a sticky and sometimes dark situation. But I think we just try to pick the best situations we can for our kids and our families and just do the best we can. We can't account for other people's consciousness and evolution. But over time, some people change and some people don't. We find out who our real friends are. We find out who is really with us and supporting our journey.
Yeah, it does help to divide and conquer. If you have a spouse that's on the same page and
mm-hmm.
and you both can attend the event together and drive separately, and then when that threshold has been reached, the one parent has just already agreed, okay, I'm leaving the party early, you know, you can stay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we
yeah.
take turns. We take turns doing that. I just
and
recently
that works.
Had a great time at a yeah, I just recently had a great time at a relative's wedding. Even though we took Sam, he lasted through the meal and he was done. And my husband had already said, when he's done, I'm done. And I got one dance on the dance floor with Sam, and then they took off. and I had a ball.
So it worked.
I had a ball, and no guilt, you know. It works out wonderfully if you have someone that can share that with you.
That's wonderful.
So it's not an everyday thing, but sometimes it works.
Mm-hmm. But you had to let go of wanting to do this like everybody else and just find a way that worked for you and your family.
Yeah.
And it took your acceptance and it took your husband's acceptance to make it work.
Yep. It's,
and you had a good time. And your son probably did too. He didn't have to stay so long that he melted down or that it became miserable.
Yeah, just accepting him for who he is and his thresholds has been monumental for our family. I don't want him to have to stay for 6 hours if his threshold is 2. It just makes everybody miserable.
Right, you want to leave in an hour and 59 while
right.
Everybody's still happy.
Exactly. And everyone commented on how well-behaved he was and how much fun it looked like he was having. And if he had stayed another 15 minutes, they would have seen the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So when he's done, he's done.
Right, and they're probably saying, wow, Sam's really doing great.
Exactly, that's what we heard. That's what we heard. Hey, he's doing so much better. I'm like, I think maybe we're the ones that are learning.
Right. And, yeah, sometimes it's like we're learning to be with each other. He's learning to be mm-hmm. with you, and you're learning to be with him within the limits of what works. And there's a lot of happiness that can be found that way. And a lot of misery when we don't find it, when we try to keep making it into a situation that it isn't.
Yeah, and a lot of people's questions about how do we get our child to sit at the holiday table. Well, maybe he doesn't sit at the holiday table. Maybe he can't yet.
Right. Maybe he will, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he really will. But if we let go, if he can't do it, if we let go of it now, we're going to have a better holiday.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. Ellen from Idaho Falls asks, how much should you expect of siblings of an autistic child as far as helping out with the child? She says that she has 6 children and a very busy household.
Mm-hmm.
So how much do you think siblings should be responsible?
It varies. Now, when the child who has autism is the younger child or the youngest child, kids pitch in and want to help because older kids always want to help with little kids. They're not always, mostly always. But when the child with autism is older or bigger, that becomes hard to do. It's kind of counterintuitive. So, you know, I met a woman from Chicago, this was several years back, and she had, 7 or 8 kids, but the youngest one had autism. And I said, how do you manage that? And she said, well, we called a meeting and we said to our children, your little brother has autism, and he was the youngest. And she said, he's the runt of the litter. I want you all to pull together and help. And it worked because he was the baby. But it wouldn't work so easy if he was the oldest one, because if he's the oldest or one of the oldest, the expectations are different. The little ones want to look up to him, but they can't. So every situation is different. I think regardless of, I gave an example, you know, in terms of the birth order, which we don't know here in this situation, but most kids want to help, but to expect them to do too much could be a burden for them. So, you know, it's really challenging when you have a large family, and I came from a large family myself, so it's quite natural for you to feel overwhelmed. But I think you may get more involvement from the siblings by expecting less. Now, that may sound counterintuitive, but I think they may pitch in more if you're not, like, requiring it. And I hope that makes a little sense. It's, again, one of the things that's hard to get into without knowing a little more.
Do you think it's helpful to educate the siblings on, like you said before, you know, educating them about the disability, but also about, you know, things you can do behaviorally to help them, or sensory issues, or...
Oh, yeah, I think all of that plays a part. I think, you know, just like, you know, we love our children, they love their brother or sister, but it can be pretty mysterious as to what's going on. So I would keep giving them information at their level, helping them, providing opportunities for them to meet other siblings. That's often really helpful to them, just as parents meeting other parents can be, you know, just so very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And in the long run, this child with autism can contribute to everybody. We can all learn. We can all become better people in the process.
I definitely think my teenagers have become better people just because they are more understanding of disabilities or abilities. And also, when we see that child melting down in the mall, we have that knowing look like that might be autism. You know, that might not
right.
just be bad parenting over there. That might be something more. And, you know, a little more compassion.
Wow, that's right.
That's helpful for our typical
kids,
too.
Yeah, I think it makes us all better people in that
mm-hmm.
way. Again, not that we'd volunteer for this. But in the end, we may all be better people and our typical kids, you know, as well.
Sure. Now, did you have any slides or any information that we haven't covered yet that you'd like to?
You know, I have a lot and some that I like to, so I will do that. And I want to mention again for anyone listening to go to our website, alternativechoices.com, and I noticed that just while we were talking, 10 more people friended us or fanned us on Facebook. So I thank you. You know, keep tuning into that. We post things several times a week, and we invite you to join the conversation there. That'll be ongoing. And we have people from around the country and either other countries checking in there. So I do have some more slides I'd like to show you and talk a little bit about as a way maybe of summing up a little.
Yeah, you have about 3 or 4 minutes.
Okay, here we go. Often the question comes up of, you know, what does acceptance mean? How do I come to peace with this? And I think for some people it feels like acceptance means giving up, but I don't think it means that at all. It doesn't mean wanting or liking autism. It doesn't mean changing your opinion about how hard it is. It doesn't mean being resigned to a miserable life. And it doesn't mean giving up on life or possibilities. What does it mean? I think acceptance means opening up to what we're really thinking and feeling and being willing to be there. Accept our own thoughts, feelings, sensations, and being willing to be right there in our lives. And it's then that we can look at what can we change and what remains the same. And that's the meaning we see in the Serenity Prayer. So having my son, and this slide that comes up shows him more recently, we're riding this like big three-wheeler because he can't ride a two-wheeler, and this is right outside the group home where he lives in Pennsylvania. When we accept our own feelings and our own selves and understand autism, it can be like falling in love with your child all over again. I think some of that came out in the stories you shared, Nancy. And in accepting these feelings and finding the way to relate and the way to make things work, our mind clears up and we can enjoy life. Not that it's easy, but it can be a good life, even though it's a hard life. And somebody asked me, like, what's it like? Well, in some way, and am I at peace with it? Well, yes, I'm at peace with it, but in some ways, I never stop wanting to hear the sound of his voice. My son's nonverbal. I'm showing you a slide of him when he was little. and you could see him like flicking his fingers. And you know, my head can go back there in a flash. I imagine other people's can as well. The slide I'm showing now shows my book, Special Children Challenge Parents. And as I mentioned earlier, this was something I wrote in a letter to Tariq. I tried so hard to change you, and in the end, it was you who changed me. Instead of becoming the son I wanted you to be, you helped me become the man I needed to be. So that's really been my journey with my son. So I don't know. In the Serenity Prayer, and these concepts exist like pretty much in every faith tradition. I just want to like kind of end on that note. It starts with God give us the grace to accept with serenity the things which cannot be changed, the courage to change the things that should be changed, and the wisdom to discern the one from the other. So it's not a matter of giving up. It's a matter of looking for what can be changed, accepting that responsibility. So if we're working on changing what's changeable and we're making peace with autism, then we can let go of guilt. We just have to work on the changeable and discern one from the other. And if we're doing that, if we're finding the things that work, if we're finding the ways to enjoy our family and enjoy our child with autism, well, then what's clearly going to happen is we're going to find some peace and we're going to find some enjoyment in life the way it actually is. So that's what I wish for everyone tonight. It's been really good to be here. I thank you for the opportunity, Nancy.
I thank you for being here and sharing so much great information with us. Every time I talk with you, I learn something new.
Always good to know.
I'm going to go upstairs and hug my kid now.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Perfect. I think I'll go hug mine, too.
I think we should. And I also wanted to share with our participants that if you want a transcript of this event, please join the Spectrum Gold Club by clicking the button on your screen. We will send you a copy of the webinar audio and transcript, plus we will send you 29 other webinars when you join. Also, tell us what you think. Call us at 877-211-0212, extension 1, and leave a short comment or testimonial. That number again is 877-211-0212. And I want to thank everyone for attending and being part of this great webinar. And thank you again, Dr. Nassif, for sharing your wonderful wisdom with us.
I certainly look forward to working with you in the future.
You too. Have a wonderful evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.